The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Inside Hub. I'm not hearing me. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Inside Hub. My name is Farid Ali. I'm your host. I know that we're having a late start. It's now 6:24. We're going into 7 p.m. My guest today is no other than one Mr. Professor Anthony Bryan. Professor Bryan, thank you for making yourself available to us. I apologize for the administrative difficulty on my end. Are you there?
Recording in progress.
Yes, I'm here.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. To the listeners, we have in studio via Zoom no other than Professor Anthony Bryan. Professor Bryan, the discussion that we invited you to participate in terms of your contribution is we've had a situation in terms of the relationship between Venezuela and the U.S. Has been an evolving one at best. It has been said, and it's in the public space, that the Rio Treaty as of 1948, it is some 73 years old. We are a signatory, we meaning Trinidad and Tobago, a signatory to that treaty as of 1967. The treaty was essentially a treaty where, having been a signatory, we, as a signatory, has the benefit or have the benefit of mutual defense, where if it is anyone attacks any of the signatories to the treaty, which includes the US, Canada, and a number of South American countries, that all of the other countries are free to be, will be involved in terms of our defense. We've had a situation that has been unfolding since the year 2020, and I can say even before that, but it came to the surface in 2020 when Joseph Mondello, the U.S. ambassador to Trinidad, or U.S. envoy to Trinidad, indicated that our relations with Venezuela seems to be a direct violation of the Rio Treaty. Our CARICOM and Foreign Affairs Minister at the time, Mr. Moses, indicated that that Trinidad and Tobago recognizes the Maduro government as being the legitimate, democratically elected government or leader in Venezuela, and therefore we have no interest whatsoever in pursuing sanctions against them. Now, the opposition in Trinidad and Tobago through one, well, let me just put it this way. The opposition here, who has now formed the government, they are now in power. They at that time had made heavy weather of the fact that we are, as a nation, has not been fulfilling obligations under the Rio Treaty, and therefore we've brought ourselves in a position where the U.S. envoy made it very clear that our relationship with Venezuela is compromising our international status with the U.S. And the U.S. being one of our major trading partners, that is a difficulty we ought to try to avoid. Now, you are the professor. When my understanding of Clause 20 of the Rio Treaty is that we ought to not court relations with Venezuela, and those 12 meetings that Delcy Rodriguez had with our then Minister of National Security seemed to be violating Article 20 of the Rio Treaty. Now, Article 25 of the very same treaty indicates that if it is we do not wish to be part of the Rio Treaty or as signatory state, we ought to openly reject it. I have spoken enough. I don't think the public is interested in my voice. What is your position in relation to the significance of the Rio Treaty And us meaning Trinidad and Tobago being a signatory, and we being in violation. There's a perception, according to Moses, the then Minister of Foreign Affairs and CARICOM Affairs, indicating that as far as he's concerned, Trinidad and Tobago was not in violation of the treaty, that the treaty allows for recognition of sovereign states, and Venezuela is a sovereign state and we ought not to interfere in its internal affairs. What is your position in terms of the treaty and us as a signatory, and whether we have violated it or not violated?
Well, Dennis Moses was correct in the sense that the treaty should not prevent us from having relations with Venezuela. How do you avoid relations with a country of 34 million people that's 7 miles away from Trinidad? That has, are you hearing me?
I'm hearing you. We are hearing you. There was a slight freeze, but you're right there with us.
Right. I mean, it's just reality, you know. Countries don't have friends, they have interests. And that is, it is in the interest of Trinidad and Tobago to have good relations with Venezuela. So I don't see there's any real problem. There's no violation of the treaty.
All right. What is your view in terms of the... It was stated that we have been trading... Paria was trading with the USS Shipping. They were trading with other entities that were affiliates of the Maduro government. In other words, there was a relationship with some of these entities that were buying oil from Paria, and the relationship between these entities and Venezuela was one of the USS Shipping had a managing director that was essentially friends of the Socialist Republic of Venezuela. And it was put in place in the public space that when Paria traded with these vessels, there was no clause contained in the contractual relationship which spoke to they ought to declare if the oil was on its way to Venezuela. Now, what I'm saying is this. It was stated that the oil that was purchased from Paria was going to Aruba. The Aruba government indicated that there was no such relationship where their administration was buying or purchasing oil and gas, and therefore any information that was indeed happening is the wrong information. My concern is this, and I want to be guided by you. If it is the U.S. take umbrage in terms of us trading with the Venezuelan Republic and us trading with them in the context of we are not adhering to the U.S. guidance that civil sanctions ought to be issued against Venezuela and there should be no trading. In other words, Venezuela ought not to signatories to the Rio Treaty ought not to trade with Venezuela or engage in their relations. It means to say that we are in some way impacting on the relationship with the U.S. If it is you're saying that we are in no way in breach of, you agree with Moses, that we were in no way in violating the terms of the Rio Treaty, do you see it as that our relationship with the U.S. should be sufficiently important that even if there is no breach in terms of the actual terms and conditions, that we should try to foster relations with the U.S. and take guidance from their foreign policy in order to create linkages with the U.S., who are our major trading partner?
Well, I think we have always had a good relationship with the U.S., there is no reason to reinvent the wheel, so to speak. We have good relations with Venezuela. We still have, to my mind, a policy of neutrality, which means that we deal with both on an equal basis. So I don't think there's an issue here, you know, quite frankly, Mr. Ali.
Mm-hmm. When we examine the impasse as it exists now, meaning that the USS Gravely had been planted on our shores between the 26th of October and the 31st of October, and their military exercises being conducted in Trinidad on a day-to-day basis as of now, within the past few days. The Maduro government have made it very clear that we are opening the door to U.S. Military exercises being conducted here in collaboration with our Trinidad and Tobago Defense Force. What is your view in terms of the synergy between the U.S. Armed Forces and the Trinidad and Tobago Defense Force? We've seen where the USS Gerald Ford has been conducting exercises in midair or within the airspace, and the Venezuelan authorities see that as courting some sort of confrontation. Are you of the view that Trinidad and Tobago should distance itself, meaning our administration should distance itself from engaging in any sort of joint military exercise or joint training exercise, because it's sending a bad signal to the Maduro administration?
Let's go back a little bit. The SOFA agreement, which allows the collaboration between the U.S. and Trinidad and Tobago, that SOFA agreement was, I think, since Prime Minister Rowley's time. So it has a history. And it has been conducted pretty much on an annual basis with the two countries. I don't think that to say that we should not continue doesn't make any sense. We should continue. Now, the timing may be difficult in the sense that this may not have been the appropriate time to conduct the joint exercises, given the fact that there is that Venezuela-US tension. So it's only the timing of SOFA that's debatable. But the fact of engaging in the SOFA, that's not a problem. That's not up for the debate at all.
The Maduro administration had their last election in July 29th or the 30th, 2025. Maduro indicated or declared victory where he had commanded some 51.6% of the national vote. The opposition leader Gonzalez indicated that he did not accept the reading of the polls, that there was not enough oversight. We had five South American countries that came out and openly spoke, including Uruguay and Brazil, where they view the results with suspicion. Having said that, Ralph Gonzalez and Roosevelt Skerrett of St. Vincent and Dominica, respectively, they were the only two Caribbean countries that came out and recognized at that time the polls and accepted it for what it was. It has been said that somewhat 8 million Venezuelans have fled their country. So there is some sort of contention with the results of the election. The United Nations conducted an exercise and they openly indicated that they have enough evidence that there are human rights abuses taking place through the Maduro administration, arbitrary executions, breaches of human rights. Are you of the view that the U.S. and Trump administration's position, posture towards Venezuela, it's one that is wholeheartedly about human trafficking and narco trafficking containment, or there may be a view to remove the administration and they're using the narco human trafficking trading as an umbrella or a facade?
And that's up for debate. You see, the fact is that the United States would be interested in regime change in Venezuela. There's no doubt about it. They have said it. They have tried, in fact, by putting CIA operatives on the ground in Venezuela. But, you know, for the rest of us, you know, the Maduro is in power. That whether you question the legitimacy of the government, the point is that it is the government at the present time. And that is who we have to deal with. And, you know, would be, I mean, scandalous if we didn't want to deal with a neighbor who is 7 miles away from us. So we don't have too much choice in the matter. You know, that battle between Venezuela and the United States, that's for them to resolve. And I'm sure they resolve it. The Venezuelans will resolve it without any help from us, you know, or help from the U.S.
Are you of the view that given the relationship that we have with the U.S. in terms of they being our biggest trading partner, given the fact that when Trump doesn't have his way, he tends to implement tariffs, and he has implemented tariffs, which makes it difficult for us to trade with the U.S. in order to acquire goods and services, or us to sell. In this case, we have a situation where Nutrien and Proman sell products to the U.S., but given the tariffs that have been put in place, it was a hurdle that we have to climb with the tariffs that were put in place. Now, we've seen where the Jamaican and the Trinidad government with Guyana were able to negotiate a removal of the tariff barriers with the U.S. in order to engage in some trade. But my question is this: in as much as we need Venezuela, we are equally in need of the U.S. And it seems that if it is our foreign policy is one of we insist we must maintain good relations with Venezuela and continue to trade with them on any level, that we risk our relationship with the U.S. and risk sanctions and risk... How do we navigate, in your view, how do we navigate between the two countries? Because we need Venezuela in terms of the oil to run our methanol plants, to look after our chemical industry here. But at the same time, our position with the U.S. is of such where we need that trading relationship, because that is where we earn money, where we earn foreign exchange. Are you of the view that Trinidad and Tobago has found itself between, and this is just my language, a rock and a hard place in terms of how do we negotiate both relationships and stay on good terms with both parties?
The way you do it is by holding to a policy of neutrality. That has been our foreign policy for as long as I could remember. Now, things have changed a little bit. Prime Minister Kamala Prasad-Bisesa has sort of thrown Trinidad into the U.S. camp by statements that she has made, saying, you know, CARICOM is useless, or in fact, Trinidad is no longer neutral. It's aligned strictly with the United States. If we have abandoned that, that's very sad, because in reality, it's the only sort of situation opposition that a small island state like Trinidad and Tobago can have. Just a policy of neutrality, freedom to deal with all, friends of all, but satellites of none, as the saying goes.
Do you accept, and I'm just postulating here, do you accept that the administration of the U.S., the Trump administration, clearly from its policy, not afraid to implement tariffs against countries that are not taking direction from it, that it we've placed ourselves in a position where neutrality could mean isolating our relationship with the U.S., that it's that a position of being neutral and trying to navigate between Venezuela and America, Venezuela and the U.S., that it's a virtually impossible position to be in, because Trump has shown that he's prepared to implement tariffs where persons don't agree or comply with his view of policy or his policies.
Yeah, but so far he hasn't. And, you know, there are no tariffs insofar as our fertilizer plants are concerned. They continue to operate as normal. You must take Mr. Trump's utterings with a little pinch of salt. You know, he's a bully. He threatens, and sometimes he just doesn't carry through. And so most of us have been able to live with that, you know, the sort of uncertainty as far as he's concerned.
I'm quoting from one of the dailies in Trinidad. This is an article that it's in the Trinidad Guardian, Wednesday, the 19th of November, 2025. It's an article that highlights that on November 14, 2025, the United States President Donald Trump signed an executive order to reverse his April 2nd directive that had imposed a 15% tariff on nitrogen and phosphate fertilizers previously listed under Annex 2 of the Executive Order 14257. This has allowed Trinidad and Tobago to benefit from duty-free access for key fertilizer products, including anhydrous ammonia, urea, and urea ammonia nitrates. From what I've just read there, from what I've read in the papers, and from what the people of Trinidad and Tobago are reading in the newspaper, if they are guided by that, Trump had a tariff, and he just removed the 15% tariff, which allows Proman and Nutrien to engage in fertilizer trade. So clearly, there was a tariff in place. It wasn't a situation there was no tariff. But let's move on from that point. This question of zones of peace, it has been said that Kamala Prasad Bisesa and her administration has said that the realities of the Caribbean countries are different, meaning that our reality and where we are strategically located, extreme south, 9 miles off the coast of Venezuela, is different from the reality of Jamaica, which is extreme north. The challenges we have in terms of murders, in terms of kidnappings, in terms of crime, are not the challenges that St. Vincent experiences. St. Vincent, the average number of murders per year in St. Vincent is under the figure 330. We have 500 plus and an average of 450 on a year-to-year basis over the past 20 years. She's indicating, and she has placed on the record, that we need to form a foreign policy that does not necessarily move in sync with CARICOM, but we need to forge relationships outside of CARICOM. What is your view in terms of we, Trinidad and Tobago, forging a foreign policy that may not be in harmony on all four legs with that of CARICOM, and that we are forging a foreign policy that is independent of? So we are part of CARICOM on so many levels, but in terms of our foreign policy, we are taking our own approach. Are you of the view that this administration, the Kamala Prasad administration, in towing the line that it's towing in terms of foreign policy, that they ought to remain more in sync with what CARICOM wants? Because CARICOM has been speaking of there should be more dialogue, conciliation. This is what Roosevelt Skerritt of Dominica and Ralph Gonzalez of St. Vincent have been postulating. But we've had opinion where Bruce Golding of Jamaica, former prime minister, indicated that clearly there are wrongs taking place in Venezuela, and clearly we can't simply embrace Venezuela because they have been quote and unquote good to the Caribbean. Venezuela has written off debts owed by St. Vincent and Dominica. And ironically, synonymously, it is those two prime ministers that are open supporters of Maduro in terms of supporting his non-invasion policy or postures that engage confrontation with Venezuela. What is your view in terms of our foreign policy with CARICOM and whether we more mediation and conciliation should be engaged as opposed to the stance that our government has taken?
We should remain in sync with CARICOM, clearly, because, you know, as I say, a small island state, we simply can't stand alone. But being a member of CARICOM and a good member of CARICOM does not preclude our extending relationships with other countries that may bring assets that the region doesn't have. Clearly, the United States comes to mind. And if we want to push it further, certainly China comes to mind. So that, I think it's two levels. You maintain strong relations with CARICOM, but you feel free to enter into external relationships with others who, I say, might bring stronger assets to bear.
If it is you're in a position to advise our prime minister in terms of how she conducts herself moving forward, because the sped arrow cannot be recalled, the spoken word cannot be recalled. As of now, as of today, moving forward, do you think that our situation is far gone and irretrievable, meaning we've played our hand, so to speak, and therefore we found ourselves between a rock and a hard place or in the jaws of a lion, and it will be difficult navigating moving forward? Or do you think that there is room for redemption of some kind in terms of creating better relations? Well, I have to say with both the U.S. and Venezuela, because I can't see how we can please two masters.
There is always room for diplomatic maneuver. And I remember a time in our history when we had some of the most experienced diplomats under the sun, people who helped us through the non-aligned movement at the time, who helped us in our relations with the third world. We have that kind of talent. I'm not sure whether there are still people like that in the Foreign Service, quite frankly, but I do know that it is not beyond our capacity to be diplomatically agile and to be able to bring diplomatic prowess to bear where it's needed.
Are you of the view, if it is we are to tread that line, you're saying that you're not sure where we have diplomats of that nature that are currently available. Is it that you're saying that all foreign affairs and CARICOM affairs minister, you don't see him as having the capacity to conduct that sort or navigate that course in this moment?
I'm not saying that at all. What I am saying is that the full brunt of foreign policy requires diplomats who are up to the task. Okay, I don't know the composition of the Foreign Service at this time. I do know that there is a foreign minister who you hardly hear a word from him, actually. The other thing to bear in mind is that the prime minister is the one who advises the diplomats. And in fact, she depends on them to execute what she terms to be the foreign policy of Trinidad and Tobago. So I'm not saying that the competence is not there. I'm just simply saying I still have to see, some evidence of that.
When we examine where things are now, Are you of the view that we hold any trump card, Trinidad and Tobago holds any trump card, and I'm not punning on anything here, don't forgive me for that. Are we in a position to, in any way, hold the hand of the U.S. if the U.S. chooses to embark on a certain course? Because what we've seen is, I believe it's the latest figure has been some 21 vessels have been summarily blown up in international waters, including the Pacific waters, and 100 plus persons have lost their lives. It has been, we can safely say that ruling in terms of the posture of the U.S. seems to be one of being extrajudicial. There was no due process, there was no trial, there wasn't anything of the sort. What is your view on that position? Do you think that is an issue for the International Criminal Court of Justice, or that is something that Caribbean countries should not lend its voice to, or is it correct for them to speak out and say that that extrajudicial action by the U.S. ought to stop?
Yes, of course. It's extrajudicial. It deserves to be brought before the ICC at some stage. You just can't go on like that. I think at least two Trinidadians have been killed in those attacks. Probably they were just fishermen. But it's extrajudicial. It has to stop. There's no reason to continue to do that. You just can't execute people without due process and without the judgment of a court. It's all wrong. It's all wrong.
There is a school of thought, and you know, in the media, people postulate that happens. It has been said that, well, the Chinese relationship, China's relationship, and the Russian relationship with the Socialist Republic of Venezuela, if the U.S. were to go in there, they quite possibly may be creating a bigger stirring than they anticipated in terms of resistance. And at the same time, the Chinese may be sending a signal to the U.S. that, if it is you are prepared to challenge the status quo, the establishment in Venezuela in terms of remove Maduro, then they would be flexing its muscles against the U.S. and perhaps sending a signal that they may do the same with regard to Taiwan if the U.S. wants to resist Chinese overtures or Chinese the mindset that they want to take control of Taiwan.
The U.S. will not attempt to invade Venezuela. They may attempt regime change by some well-placed direct strikes, but certainly it's not a country that you can invade easily. Secondly, there will be a lot of resistance, not only from the Venezuelan public, but also from the Russian and Chinese establishments that are there. So that's a cauldron, that's a hot one. And I think the United States is not rash with respect to doing something like that. You can't invade Venezuela, it's too large. It just doesn't happen.
Are you of the view that, and we just have about 2 minutes, I have to thank you for your time. Are you of the view that the Venezuelans will not risk, the Maduro government or Maduro regime will not risk any attack on Trinidad in some way, any retaliation in Trinidad, if the U.S. Attacks their administration or attacks in Venezuela in any which form? Do you hold any concerns that there could be retaliation and we can fall victim to a U.S. attack on Venezuela?
There is always that possibility, particularly if the Venezuelans perceive that Trinidad is a staging area for an attack on Venezuela. We obviously run that risk. But I think neither the U.S. or Venezuela would want to have us be in that sort of staging area. That is pushing the envelope a bit too far.
I want to thank you for your presence here today, Dr. Brian, Professor Brian, and thank you to the CNC News. Thank you again.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.